This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. There's a certain luxury to being anonymous in a public space. You can stroll through the crowd, maybe act a little goofy if you have the impulse, and not worry about consequences. But what if you were no longer anonymous? Your face is being recognized by security cameras, not just by the government's cameras or law enforcement, but everyone who is sporting the latest tech, like a Google Glass. They see your face, they get a readout in their heads-up display with your name, maybe also your criminal record, or if you have a concealed handgun license, if you completed college, all sorts of little factoids right there next to your face that they have identified, and you are no longer just another face in the crowd. Is this the future? Facial recognition technology is now here, and it's getting ready for prime time in the consumer market. How is this going to change our lives? What do you think? Will you embrace this brave new world, or will you demand the government to make a law to stop it? Well, call in. We want to hear your ideas. The number is 210-614-8980, 614-8980. You could also email us at thesource@tpr.org. Joining us this half hour to talk about this, Craig Spiesel. He is the executive director of the Online Trust Alliance, an IT industry working group dedicated to self-regulation and best practices in online privacy, security, and identity. And also Joseph Lorenzo Hall. He is the chief technologist at the Center for Democracy and Technology. Welcome to The Source, both of y'all.
Well, thank you.
So, Joe Hall, let me ask you, where are we on this tech? Is it really this good right now? And Joe Hall's not there, but maybe Craig, can you answer the question?
Well, great, and thank you for inviting us to participate today. I mean, the technology is clearly rapidly emerging, and what we're seeing today is clearly advances being used for fraud detections, security in different forms and venues. But we're seeing the computing power rapidly increase. So the question is, today it certainly can be used to enhance one's security and arguably one's privacy, but how will it be used in the future and what safeguards need to be in place?
So they need to have a database to compare, to run against the images that they're going to see when they're, you know, scanning people out in the crowd. Where is that database? Where are all these photos coming from?
Well, it depends. If you're thinking of a scenario of in a mall, for example, or a merchant, a major retailer, they may collect data of consumers that are active shoppers, perhaps are top-level tier. And so that may be through multiple point-of-purchase displays and such.
So like when I buy something, there may be a camera that's going to take my picture, and then you'll know who I am and everything about me and my face.
We're talking scenarios. So there is an example of that, and there you walk into the merchant and they know you're a very active, high net worth customer, and they come and they greet you and perhaps show you some new things. That's an example that a consumer could get a lot of value from that. Conversely, you've been caught shoplifting three times in that store, and they greet you at the door and they walk you outside. And again, that's nothing new today. That type of technology exists. So in the right context, like I said, it can be used in many areas. And then a third scenario is a form of authentication. Is it an example? Is it better than a password that's easily compromised?
And Joe Hall, you're back now. Sorry about for that technical glitch. So even in this technology, there are glitches. So that brings up the issue. I mean, is this technology scary? Because you can get things wrong no matter how good something is.
Yeah. First of all, thank you for having me. Here at the Center for Democracy and Technology, we're a research and advocacy organization, and we come at this from two angles. One is the privacy angle, and the other is, you know, we really want to see cool things exist. And so from the privacy side, facial recognition does pose a number of sort of scary problems. For example, it's kind of like a license plate in the sense that your face can be very easily used to identify you. But unlike a license plate, you know, your face is something you can't remove from your body. It's not a secret. It's not something you can change easily. A lot of states have laws that prevent you from wearing masks in public. So you can't, you know, sort of control how your face is used. And so it is sort of you know, one dystopian view of the future is exactly, you know, ubiquitous facial identification as you walk through, you know, your town during your daily life. And we really don't want to see that happen. We want to make sure that people feel, you know, somewhat comfortable and free out and about while they do sort of regular mundane tasks.
How good is the technology right now? If I suddenly grow a beard and put on dark glasses and a cowboy hat, and that, is that going to trick this technology, Joe?
So it depends on what kind of facial recognition technology they're using. Some can be very, very accurate. You know, some types of techniques will detect individual moles on your face or certain kinds of very unique features that, in concert, all of those things are unlikely to be completely covered up by you unless, you know, you're doing some really crazy Hollywood makeup stuff. But you're right. In general, the less sophisticated techniques, the kinds that digital signs, ones that are meant to sort of change an advertisement based on your demographic characteristics and stuff like that, they don't get anywhere near that sophisticated. It's really expensive. You need a very high-resolution photograph to do the more sophisticated types. Those are typically used in you know, authentication scenarios or in video surveillance. And even there, they tend to combine your face and your gait, how you walk, to do those things.
So Craig Spiesel over at the Online Trust Alliance, just tell me, how do you, what's your feeling that where are we going with this? And if we don't make any changes, or are you concerned, or do you think that the people will work this out on their own?
Well, Joe and I are very well aligned, I think, on some of the same concerns we have. And in the right context, this, you know, can be security enhancing. In other contexts, this also can give you a better authentication, so better control. And right now, it's in its infancy, and the challenge is, as technology advances, computing power costs decrease, we will see more applications for this. There is a challenge of false positives. You know, what if, you know, again, like Joe mentioned, the accuracy really depends on how high resolution of images and the algorithms analyzing it. So you are in a scenario that you could have a false positive, and in a certain context, it could be a problem. You know, does that mean you denied access?
All right, so we're going to take a quick break, but it sounds like you're saying there is upside, there is benefit to this technology. Let's not freak ourselves out about this, but we do need to proceed cautiously. Is that what you're saying?
I think yes.
Okay. All right, so we're going to take a quick break. We want to hear from our listeners. What do you think about this technology? Are you freaked out, or do you think that this is good stuff? We need to figure out how to make it work for us. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. And this is The Source on KSTX, and we will be right back. And welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about a new app for Google Glass. It's called NameTag. This is something that can help you when you meet people. It can identify them. It calls up their name and other kind of information about them if their face is in the database. So is this a scary technology? Are you worried about it? Something out of a sci-fi film. Craig Spiesel joins us. He's the executive director of Online Trust Alliance. Joe Hall is the chief technologist at the Center for Democracy and Technology. So the U.S. has adopted kind of one way of dealing with this, but I know that Europe is they're not waiting. They're already adopting some tougher standards. Is that right, Joe?
So Europe is a little different in the sense that for security and like law enforcement purposes, it tends to be, for the most part, unregulated. I mean, not unregulated. It's more that there are fewer regulations. But for commercial uses, your face is considered a biometric and is considered, you know, a very personal type of information about you. And as we said earlier, one that's very hard to sort of control use over. And so using, you know, face data in commercial applications is going to be harder in Europe. And, for example, Facebook had to negotiate a deal with, I believe, the data protection authority in Ireland in order to, and they had to actually change their service a little bit in order to do even the simple sort of tagging that you see on Facebook, where if you tag a person that in a photo you have, later if you upload more photos, it will suggest that person again. And that's, you know, while we tend to like the more opt-in approach that, yes, I would like to be facially identified kind of a thing, Facebook tends to take an opt-out approach, but they do sort of silo it in the sense that it's not everyone in Facebook that they'll suggest, it's just your friends that they suggest. And so in Europe, it's definitely, it's a little bit different. I think it's easier to make the case that you can do stuff for security purposes over there, when in commercial contexts, it's going to be a lot harder. It's not sort of like in the U.S. where we have, you know, commercial entities are free to do things with public data in your face for most part when you walk around. If you take a picture of it, that would seem to be public data. It's just one that people have a real important interest in.
Okay, let's go to the phones. The phone lines are open. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. Deirdre has called in. Deirdre, welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to say that ultimately I can see the benefit of this facial recognition, especially in, you know, dealing with crime and criminals and that type of thing. But despite those benefits, I really am not a fan of that type of thing. I mean, already I think technology is too invasive. You know, you get on Amazon and they, you know, take a record of things you've bought before and try to suggest more things to buy. I don't like everything being tracked and so easily trackable for people who aren't criminals.
Okay, Deirdre, thanks for calling in. Appreciate those comments. Craig, she's saying, if this helps fight crime or, you know, terrorism, then maybe that's a good thing, right? Is that an excuse that we're going to hear from, or reasoning that we're going to hear from authorities?
Well, I think, it's a good question she brought us up, because we're talking about from the multi-stakeholder effort businesses, but we also have to think about how is this data being used or will be used by law enforcement and such. And obviously in examples of like Boston bombing and things like that, you know, it was very helpful. But reality is, unlike what's seen on TV, at least from the data that I've seen, most of these things aren't really facial recognition. There are people going through and they're looking at a lot of manual processing today. We certainly see it in casinos and other areas as well. But again, we need to have those safeguards, and clearly not just by the business community, but also by governments as well.
So the question is, how much privacy should I expect? If I'm in a public square and I'm walking around, do I have an expectation that no one is going to scan my face and name tag me and know precisely who I am and be able to trace information about me there? I mean, do I have that right, Joe?
So we tend to think that your privacy should stay relatively the same, that, you know, your privacy in 2006 shouldn't be very different from 2016. That may not be the case, but in the end, you know, if name tag, if that app that we're talking about was simply a way to help you remember people's names, and so it didn't draw on third-party databases or whatever to, like, Facebook to pull in, or, you know, OkCupid to pull in, you know, what kind of wine you like or whatever, you know, if it didn't do that, that would be fine. It would be sort of like a memory tool, and that wouldn't, you know, that would be just something that's helping you remember. But here it's really about sort of leveraging the vast quantities of data that we make available ourselves, many of us on social network profiles. And it really seems like if what we end up having is an arms race between people that want their privacy out on the street and people that want to be able to identify people, that's a pretty poor way to go. I mean, inevitably, I think what we would hate to see is, and this could very easily happen, if NameTag were to put up a bunch of cameras all around a city, you can imagine not only clicking, you know, sort of taking a snapshot of someone's face and getting all their profile information, but seeing everywhere they've been today or everywhere they've been in the last week. That's the sort of longitudinal over time, you know, collection and display of information. That's when it really starts to get sort of, oh, geez, I may think that I don't have privacy when I'm out in public, but I'm certainly not expecting someone to collect every single place I've went for, you know, a long period of time. And that's a very easy thing to see this turning into.
But Craig, is this just social learning? Because it's new, it seems scary to us. It sounds like a dystopian type future. But when actually you live in that world, it's because we've already lost a lot of that already. It's very hard for us to mask our identity and move about in society. You are who you are.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is every new technology seems to be introducing some new challenges, and so late 1800s is a famous law case that went up to Justice Brandeis, and it dealt with the right of privacy with people walking out around in box cameras in the public square. And so fast forward 130 years later, we're having similar conversations. What's more challenging, and I think Joe started to mention on it, is it's how the data gets appended and added. And it's individual pixels of data by themselves may appear very benign, but if I'm now starting adding geolocation tags and over time that I know this is Joe and I know with a high degree of confidence where he's going to be every Tuesday morning, that gets to be rather concerning.
And democracy, I think it works best when you do have a cloak of being able to be anonymous at times. That's why we have the secret ballot. You know, do we lose an element of democracy when if I'm going to go to a protest, I'm going to be single, you know, be able to be ID'd, and that's going to follow me around in my record, Joe?
Yes, I used to hack voting machines, so we could talk all day about the secret ballot and democracy. But certainly, part of what a democratic society is about is allowing the free-thinking public to make decisions and choices based on arriving at their own sort of determination about any given issue. And to the extent that you're causing people to think about what they say before they say it, to the extent that you're making people think about where they go before they go, maybe they want to drive around the block a few more times just to frustrate the people watching where they go, you know, that is – I mean, it's wasteful at a very basic level, but it very much soon becomes something where you stop thinking about what you're doing, and you sort of normalize that behavior, and that is fundamentally antithetical to democratic society.
So you're saying it'll have a chilling effect on activism.
Yes. Yeah, you have to have free space in which to make mistakes. That's, you know, a fundamental part about democracy. Otherwise, you get very quickly to sort of an authoritarian – you know, someone has control over my ability to make mistakes, to think freely.
We're talking about facial recognition technology as it moves into the mainstream, and it's being perfected. A Google Glass app called NameTag is now working out the bugs. It's getting better and better at when you meet people, it's able to call up who that person is instantaneously. And so it seemed like, Craig, that people are more comfortable with corporations having this information at their fingertips, but not so comfortable with the government having it. Is that right?
I don't know if I'd make that jump there. I think there's at times it'll blend. And again, there's a lot of concerns of major corporations and their dominance in the marketplace and the data stores, the whole concept of data brokers and big data. As I mentioned, you start having photos, you start having a tracking where Joe is going online. You start tracking his mobile device and where he's physically at. I actually would suggest that I have a bigger concern over a corporate use of that data, and do consumers have the right and the ability to control the collection? Do they have notice? And do they have the ability of know who it's being shared with?
Is it too late to opt out, Joe? I mean, if I've already been on Facebook, they got the little movie about me, they know all about me, and so my information is out there, right?
Well, it depends on what you've done with your information, and if maybe you were a little cavalier with it earlier in your life, and since then you've locked it down a bit, it just depends on who may have captured that, you know, back in the day. But certainly, you know, we are all sharing more and more. I think we all enjoy what we get from sharing. You know, I wouldn't be able to see my 6-month-old niece so easily if there weren't a place on Facebook I could go do that. But, you know, to get to what Craig was talking about, you know, in addition to commercial entities collecting more and more data about you and saying that they protect it very well, and in a lot of cases they do protect it very well. You know, one of the enduring lessons from Mr. Snowden is that the second commercial entity has a piece of data about you, it's not terribly difficult for law enforcement or national intelligence apparatus to get access to that data. And while I'm a patriot and I believe that they really, in their hearts of hearts, are protecting us against very bad things, it is not so. There's not a very clear line between the commercial and the government stuff. You know, the government can very easily purchase things from commercial entities that it wouldn't be able to get on its own.
So we need to be having this conversation now before this technology becomes everywhere. What are the best practices to have you all established that need to be put into place to protect people who don't want to be outed when you're just walking around out on the street, Craig?
Well, we're at the crossroads of what they are, but I would suggest that they should be no different than the same ability to control data on my mobile device and other forms of technology that are collecting data on my usage. But again, in the right context and the ability for a consumer to opt in and control and collect and understand, I should say, there could be a lot of consumer value that you get, like we get today, mobile devices that provide mapping and different things there. Consumers can get great value. So we want to be careful not to demonize it, but we want to make sure these considerations are put forth now as companies are developing business plans and technology models.
And we have to weigh those things. I mean, my face can be my password from now on if they have good facial recognition technology, and so I don't have to remember a password. Well, that's, big deal, right? In comparison to now I've lost my privacy out in the world, Joe.
Yeah, and we should be careful, the sort of brain trust of American scientific knowledge and standard setting is NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, and they recommend you should never use a biometric for authentication without something else like a password or something like that. And so if you are using facial recognition as an authenticator, I really hope there's something else you have to type in or something else you have to provide to do that, because if someone takes a good picture of you and holds it up in front of that camera,
yeah, then that's it. They've got
very well good at, yeah.
They're in. All right, well, facial recognition technology, this is burgeoning. It's coming. It's part of the mainstream. Thank you so much for talking about it with us this afternoon. This is The Source on KSTX.